Hey, everyone, and welcome to a cold intro to the Matt Talks Wine Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And my guest, it's one of my favorites. It's Renee. It's Renee Falazza. And I think I even mispronounced her name here. And I'm definitely going to, when you hear the podcast, and then she corrects me. But the great thing is she told me there was people that are far worse than I am with her name. And I mean, how embarrassing is it that a guest who's been on three times, who's been a friend of mine, and I still screw up her name? And it's even worse, you know, just because you think by now I would have it figured out. I'm doing this intro because I want to apologize. There is some fuzz, some audio static, and this has happened in one other podcast. And I think I might have it figured out. It's probably something really simple about issues with gain. Anyway, you don't need to hear that. I'm just basically telling you to warn you, there's going to be some static. I spent a lot of time cleaning it up as best I could, but I figure this is really just expectation management. So you know it going in, so you won't be as annoyed, but you're going to want to listen to this podcast. In fact, it's a two-parter because Renee is that good. And what I loved is she brought all these great wines from Prince Edward County, funky stuff, different stuff, really impressive Pinots and Chards, and with some age on it, like not crazy, you know, 45-year-old Bordeaux age, but, you know, we're talking 5 to 8 years, and it really is a nice mix of different wines you get from Prince Edward County. And I appreciate it because I focus so much on Niagara. It was good to get back to all things Peck because that was really where I first started to fall in love with Ontario wine. So I appreciated the time and the generosity from Renee, who's someone everyone should follow and listen to because for 100 different reasons, mainly she's dedicated to making wine more accessible for everyone. Her job is to make you enjoy it. Her job is to entertain you. And she does a really good job at that, which is why she's back again. We debate Love Actually. We have some really fun and different wine pairing notes that we do, things involving llamas. I'll just leave it at that. And Drew Barrymore. Drew Barrymore actually is used to describe a wine, or at least the nose. And I got to tell you, it kind of really hits. Anyway, this is part one of the two-parter with Renee. Enjoy.
The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. My guest today, third time on, and I'm just going to say Renee Safrazza, and I always mispronounce your last name, which is the worst because, you know, it's me. I do it, and I feel shame. But you had to battle through traffic, through flooding, through apocalypse to get here. People should go to winebyrenee.com. Damn it, if she drove here like this, she should have 10 plugs at least. Renee, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. And surprisingly, everyone gets my last name wrong, but it's honestly, to me, I'm kind of collecting memories of who does it the worst. You are not the worst.
What?
You are not the worst.
How can I not be the you know what the worst part is? I actually made sure to like put it phonetically, and yet then I still screw it up.
That's okay. Don't worry about it. No. The worst one, Sperlazza, which is very, and my last name is Sferazza.
Yep.
And as you can tell, there's no P's or L's in there.
There isn't.
Or T's. So, you know, you're not the worst. You can feel better about that.
I actually do, because I now feel like when I got a C- if it's on the test. But hey, there's a bunch of people in the class that got D's.
Yeah.
So suddenly I feel
And this one better. Was on national television, so it was far worse.
What did you, okay, you know what? We'll talk about all the wines that you brought. You brought a ton of stuff from Prince Edward County. But real quick, let's just start here. What are the toughest things about doing wine on TV? I see you all the time, all over a variety of different news stations. I think my favorite, because I'm biased, is you and Tim Bolin. I love you two guys on it together. What's the toughest thing about it?
I think that the toughest thing is making it look like I'm actually over prepared for things.
Right.
I'm very, very over prepared. prepared for TV. I write an entire script out, what I'm going to say about each product that I'm bringing, what I think the other person is going to say, when I think they're going to cut me off, when I want to have pause points. And I memorize that from start to finish. And I'll repeat it over and over and over again on my way to the studio before I do the segment. The thing that's probably the hardest is with live TV is when somebody screws up, you can, like, you're literally watching them screw up in front of you and mm-hmm. you can't do anything other than continue to say, like, yeah, give that a smell and a taste. Yet this wine, lots of oak finish. And you're just like looking around the room. The camera guy is not on this thing that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It happened recently on a segment on CHCH where Tim actually held up a magazine and the camera guy didn't notice and it was filming from overhead. So all you saw was the top of his hand
right.
on a table. And I'm just like, okay, great. That's some dead air. The hard thing about TV, like probably the hardest thing, is that everybody's expectations. You know, a lot of people want to do earned media nowadays, but earned media doesn't really exist anymore. For everybody listening, earned media is free stuff. TV is not free. It costs a lot of money to make anything that you like, actually. It's very unfortunate, but people need to get paid a living wage. We like all this stuff, you know, all that has to happen. So when you have people's expectations and things, because they've paid for products to be talked about, you work out these relationships with people, you work out, hey, this is how I'm going to talk about your product through my lens, through this topic. This is how I think it fits. You have these really deep relationships with clients, and then you see a screw up that you can't fix, even if you wanted to, because it's happening at the same time.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, great. A phone call will be happening in the soon future. And I'm already starting to prepare what I will be saying.
So on live TV, you're already preparing your conversation that's going to happen hours later.
Like hours later or a day later, or someone's going to call me and be like, so we really didn't like that this happened. I'm like, yes, I agree with you. I also didn't like that that happened. Mm-hmm. Here's what I did. And here's where somebody else screwed up. So we'll just fix that later.
And it's also, it's live TV. I mean, that's the mistakes are going to happen.
Yeah.
And also, I guess for you, you have to train yourself differently. When you are hosting events, and we'll get to some of those, you were fantastic at the Rural Radio event a little while ago.
Thank you.
You know, for those, you can talk, you can go on, you can improvise, but on TV, especially live TV, you know, you got to get messages and you got to get it out quick.
Yeah, everything is timed. So this is why I write my scripts. This is why I prepare everything. If somebody tells me I have a 5-minute segment, I actually have like 4.5 minutes. And
smart.
If you've ever done a speech in school, those speeches were 3 to 5 minutes long. If anyone's gone up through the education system here in Ontario, like I have, 3 to 5 minute long speech that seems like it's a lot to talk through, but it's not. I usually have 5 products. I also usually have to include like an entrance point, things to sew all these ideas together, and an exit point. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot to kind of cover. And then I think the hardest version of TV is not when I'm doing wine. It's when I have cocktails to do on TV and make those live
right
on TV.
Oh, that's
which I have coming up soon. It's planning it, making sure what's the easiest cocktail to make,
having everything laid out properly and all that. Yeah, that's tough.
Everything's already like in the it's already measured out in the amount of shots, so it's like 2 shots of this, boop boop boop. It's like a Food Network thing, and it's done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Star wipe, and here is the drink. And I know we've talked about this before, but the one thing I always enjoy is, especially when you're doing a new show or with a new host, you can often sense the insecurity in the host when it comes to wine, which is also just a manifestation of how so many people get nervous about wine. You can actually see it playing live on TV.
You can, and I try to tell people, like people that are not as familiar, you know, you really like Tim Bolin. It's great that you do, because his wife is a sommelier.
Yep.
And he's very, very knowledgeable about wine, and which is great, because I don't feel like I have to inform him as much about stuff. But I try to, when I haven't met someone or when I know that they're not a big drinker, because not all these people on TV are big drinkers.
No.
Not all of them drink the same things. Some people get really excited when I bring specific things in that they like. But otherwise, I try to talk to them before and be like, hey, you listen, you don't have to drink it if you don't want to. Like, this is how you can smell it to kind of get like most of the notes. I'm not going to go through this on this segment. You don't have to taste everything. Like, tell me what you want to taste. I'll hand you that glass. I try to talk to people beforehand so that they know what to expect. Nobody likes to be thrown off guard.
No.
On live TV.
They do not.
Hosts included, guests included, like myself. Nobody likes that.
No, the last thing you want, I mean, if you really wanted to screw some of the hosts, like, yeah, can you give me your top three tertiary notes of this this Northern Italian white wine?
No, softball questions only. Like, give that a taste and a smell. What'd you like? Did you like it? That's nice.
Yeah, but also you got to know the audience and stuff. That the nerdy stuff isn't for CH, but you still want to teach people.
So they leave
learning something.
I do, and that's what comes in with the pre-prepared content.
Right.
And that pre-preparedness, that kind of planning beforehand makes everything look like I'm not worried. Mm-hmm. And it makes everything look like I know exact. It's very succinct. I kind of go through stuff. So when we look at the wines, we have wines from Prince Edward County here today, and they're ranging in age from 2015 to 2020. And what I wanted, if I were to say that on TV, I'd be like, we have a range of wines from Prince Edward County. We're going about 10 a decade, 2015 to 2020, a little bit more than that. Prince Edward County is really well known for crisp white Chardonnays. They're also really known for Pinot Noirs and a little bit of stuff in between. That's two sentences, and it's fast. So you really got to boil stuff down a lot.
You always look comfortable on TV, and that's so important, because if you're comfortable, then the viewer's comfortable. If the viewer's comfortable, they're going to enjoy it more. They're going to absorb it more because they're not staring at the TV going, oh, I'm now feeling uncomfortable, because then it's not a good viewing experience for anyone.
I agree. I'm actually really surprised because I went back and I watched my first TV segment that I ever did recently. Well, this year I won the Read the Peak Empowered Leaders of Tomorrow something award. Leaders of Tomorrow award, something like that. I can't remember what it was called right now. I'm blanking. And I went back to watch my first TV segment that I ever got hired to do on CityLine during the pandemic. In a different room than Tracy Moore, with a 3-second leg in between what she's saying and what I'm saying. I am very surprised that they had Emerging Leaders Award. That's what it was. That she had me back. That they all had me back. They liked what I said enough to bring me back. But I watched it back and I was like, oh my God, I look terrified.
But also, you know, A, it's your first time. They probably knew that. B, you're doing it not in the best environment. So they're going to give you the benefit of the doubt. You know, you weren't put in the best position to succeed either.
No.
But no one was at that.
And the feedback, like waiting, it's so hard to describe to people, waiting 3 seconds to hear somebody else's response.
Yeah.
And you can't talk while you're waiting for their response, or else you won't hear their response.
That feels forever, by the way. It 3 seconds like of silence on TV. Yeah, that is forever.
And you can't not talk. You have to look like you're talking to them. It's so much to keep up with.
I get all the time, Matt, why aren't you smiling? Like when I do hits and they're asking me a question, you know, I have to remind myself, smile, not a big smile, not a creepy smile, but you can't be
normal
neutral.
Person smile.
I'm like, Matt, do a normal person smile. Please try to convince the audience you are normal.
I like to joke all the time with people that, like, my friends that really know me, is I have Botox. I've had Botox for years. I'm like, this is a business expense. Mm-hmm. I have no true facial features on camera, and this is very good for business.
Write it off.
Oh, of course I am.
So what is the first wine that we are? And again, I appreciate. I love it. You come over here with like 6 different bottles of wine. In fact, I think you've brought more wine to me for interviews than anyone else. In fact, I don't even think it's close.
I had this whole idea because now that I've been on 3 times, the first time I brought wines from a previous project that I was working on. The second time, I think we continued that conversation. And since then, you've started to dive fully into Canadian wines, specifically Ontario wines.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think, what conversation would you have not had? I'm back here on again. And what conversation have you not had? I don't think you've had like a retrospective tasting of Prince Edward County.
No, certainly not. A lot more on the Niagara side, a lot less on the Prince Edward County side, even though, you know, Clos and Chase is incredible. Rose Hall is incredible. Long Dog, there's a lot of good stuff.
So I'll give like a quick rundown of what we have, and then we'll taste the first one. So the first wine that we have is the Lacey Estates 2015 Chardonnay. That's just a PECVQA. This is before they even changed their label, Lacey Estates. It's like gold with like this yellow, almost Veuve Clicquot yellow label in a crest style of way. Then we have the Lighthall 2017 Chardonnay. I love Lighthall with their Luna Moth on there. Really, really cool. Then we have the Mirandin 2019 Pleasant Lot blend. Now, this is a blend of Gewürztraminer, Muscat, Pinot Gris, and Riesling. So, I'll have a lot to talk about there. Next, we have the 2018 Stanners Vineyard Pinot Gris. I can't even pronounce this. Are you good at French?
No. Let's see. I'll try the... Oh, that's the Cuvier.
The Cuvier. There we go. And this is a skin contact Pinot Gris. Really, really cool. Then we have the Carlo Estates 2018 Pinot Noir and the Old Third 2020 Gamay Noir. I tried to pick wines that you wouldn't necessarily find, like retail locations here. Really have to try to go out and see. I've been picking these up over time, and you know, I thought they were like a great little sum up of Prince Edward County.
I love it. You know, obviously Carlo Estate, I did like a three-parter with them ages ago, and that was very emotional. But let's start with the first one.
2015. Mm-hmm. All right. So I don't know the winemaking to these, like I said already, but there is definitely oak treatment on this.
Yes.
Kimball Lacey is really well known for working at Kloss & Chase before opening Lacey Estates. And honestly, rest his soul, he's left us now. But he's done a great job at kind of keeping similar style to winemaking. And their wineries are literally across the street from each other.
Mm-hmm.
They're right across the street. So we have these really great, like, buttery, popcorny, tertiary mushroomy notes. It honestly smells like if you make French mushrooms cooked in butter.
That's
like a mushroom pie.
That's a perfect way to put it. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then somehow somebody's cutting like apples for dessert in the distance, and there's like a little bit of earthiness on it.
And I took a bit of a sip. It's still quite alive. You know, there's always that, you know, for people who don't know, they think a white wine, especially from Ontario, you've got to drink it 17 minutes after you purchase it from the vineyard. And that couldn't be further from the truth. I love the development, the maturity, the little bit of nuttiness and things going on, but also still a lot of the notes you said on the aromatic is there on the palate as well.
No, I can see that he's probably not doing a whole bunch of lees aging with this, because the minerality of PEC is coming through. Minerality is hitting, like, hits right on the center of the palate, kind of has this almost like minerality with effervescent almost equals mineral water that has a lot more rocks in it. Or if you got like salt on your mouth when you're swimming, like, kind of sticks to the center of your palate. The thing about this wine that's quite interesting is that it is very rich and bold and oxidized in a good way.
Yes.
It doesn't have like a full creamy palate. So I'm thinking that he did some good oak aging on this, and maybe like 15% with like at least a little bit of new, and then not much lees aging or an oak ferment.
And the one point you brought up that I liked was people hear the word oxidized and they get scared, and they shouldn't. It just adds it adds an element to it. It brings more depth to it, and it just makes it more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I am always a fan of a little bit of oxidized notes, especially my Chardonnay. I think Chardonnay can, you know, it's big enough, it can handle it.
I think the thing is, like, when we think of oxidized, it sounds like a bad thing, but copper oxidized equals green. So we get a lot of really unique things from oxygen around us. A lot of helpful things from oxygen. And it's one of the main reasons why we see these flavors and unique things in wine. The other thing is that Chardonnay is not an exorbitantly, it is an oxidative varietal. It does respond to oxygen quite well, but it's not as responding to oxygen as you would have like a Tempranillo. Mm-hmm. So you see like Tempranillo goes like brown fairly quickly. Chardonnay takes on gold colors quicker than some other grape varietals out there, but it needs oxygen. It's just what it's going to do anyway.
That's lovely. Thank you.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, good on Lacey for a wine that's approaching 10 years old. You know, that's, you could still throw that away for a couple more years. I wouldn't throw it away for 10 more, but if you want to throw it away for 3-4 more years, I think it would just get that much more interesting.
I have another one at home that I haven't opened yet. So that's pretty good. And this, oh, wow, the color on this guy. Yeah. Jeez. Okay, so listeners at home, we have the Lighthall Chardonnay in the glass, and Matt's going to tell you the exact color that this is.
This is like almost part brown, part gold. This wine, it's funny. This wine here looks, it looks even older than the Lacy, even though it is a couple years younger than it. The nose is a little...
Okay, Glenn, who made this wine, mm-hmm. I can't remember his last name. His mm-hmm. name is Glenn, though. And he was the one who showed me around Light Hall when I bought this. When did I buy this? I think I bought this 2017. I must have bought it in 2018, previous vintage. He had shown me around the barrel cellar. I think it's all secondary, third, or like very neutral oak. Mm-hmm. And he really likes lot style, like a very naturally... not too much oak aged style in general. And I'm trying to read the side of the bottle to see if he's given any ideas, but I think.
I'm a little nervous on the nose. I'm a yeah. little nervous. I'm not saying that it's cooked, but I'm not going in. The Lacy, you smelt it and right away you knew this is a good wine. This one's going to be nice and fun. This one feels a little bit more of a risk. Like I feel like this one, we're on a thin white, you know, a thin rope bridge, excuse me, you know, going over a mountain, something that like Indiana Jones would be on. And I'm nervous to walk on this bridge.
Okay. So this definitely does give like mustard yellow scarf mm-hmm. in the glass. And it gives like wool that somebody brought back from an alpaca in Argentina, having a great, they're like, oh, we went on this wonderful Patagonian hike. It's a little funky. It's a little musty.
Yeah. This is a llama that someone that went through like an orange field.
Yeah, it did. It really,
and it's sweating.
It's like a sweaty llama orange,
yeah,
but
it's a sweaty llama orange.
It is. And somehow at the same time of that happening, you're also eating a bunch of quince jam, mm-hmm. just like from the jam jar or a quince jelly of some sort.
That's such a cliche, you know, the sweaty llama and quince jelly and orange.
I know, really. It's yeah. like a really common tasting note. Like really very, is. Very common.
Well,
I think the palate is a lot more vibrant than the nose.
Yes.
Which is the saving grace on this one. I think like we have two separate Chardonnays here, which represent two different sides of Ontario winemaking, something very, very funky and something very, very classic. We have a winemaker coming from a very classic background with Kimball over at Lacy. And then Glenn kind of does whatever he wants over at Light Hall at the time. I also have a Merlot from the same vintage.
Yes, so do and, I got their first vintage of their Merlots. Yeah. I threw it away. I heard nothing but great things about it.
Oh, it's, I'm going to age it for longer because I tried it in the barrel and mm-hmm. it was already funky in the barrel. And I was like, oh, this is going to be unique.
Yep. I have one. It's not off by any stretch, not even close. Mm-mm. It just, as you said, this is just a representation of this winemaker, making it more funky, just letting it do what it wants to do. This is not going to be a crowd pleaser.
No, this is the person that would have this wine in a tasting would be like, yeah, give me this Sauvignon, give me this funky Ontario thing, give me this really weird Cinsault from South Africa. Like they want like the Sauvignon style Chenin. They want like super funky Riesling, even having an orange wine in there. Like I am looking at like the funky.
Third sip, I'm enjoying it more. I'm sort of actually going a little bit towards some sort of Southern Rhone, Roussan kind of, because I just that intense orange peel, cooked orange peel thing is coming through.
Yeah.
The first sip, I'm like, oh, is this a bad bottle? The second sip, no, it's not bad. It's funky. Third sip, I'm like, okay. I'm now starting to enjoy you.
It's growing on you.
Yeah, it's like a really arty movie where yeah. you're like, oh God, the director, stop talking down to me.
Like anything by Michel Gondry.
Yeah, and then at some point you just, you know what this is? Okay, this is Poor Things. Poor Things, what the hell is going on? And I can't look at William Dafoe. But then halfway in, you're just loving Emma Stone. And of course, at one point I'm like, you know what? Almost too much nudity. I get it. There's her nipples. Fantastic. You know, maybe a little too much nudity.
Yeah, I think.
By the way, I can't wait to do my notes when I do like my promotion of this one. There's llamas. There's llamas and Poor Things so far.
Llamas, Poor Things, all that together.
Yeah.
I think the fun thing about like wines like this is that we get to have this really fun conversation about like what is natural wine, what constitutes like a fun or a funkier style of wine. Because I think when we get these shifts right now, to me, on like the consumer side, because I'm always on the consumer side of things, a natural wine isn't necessarily like what people think. For us in the wine world, a natural wine is a natural fermented wine. It has like low intervention overall. You get like, you can get a very classic style from a natural wine as well, depending on how people do their winemaking. But you also get a very funky style from natural wine. And this to me is a very well done wine from Prince Edward County that is on like the consumer thought process of natural.
This one actually tastes like, what I never like is when you can see sometimes if some wineries, are they doing natural more for marketing versus this is what they actually want? They want to, you know, the expression of the grape and the terroir. But yeah, no, this one's definitely grown on me, and I'm going to stick. It's Poor Things.
Okay.
I love the movie by then.
Done. You know, the other thing that I should mention about this terroir is that Lighthall is a lot farther south toward the Bay of Quinte in terms of like Prince Edward County is a massive landmass. It takes up the entire space from driving from like Oakville to Scarborough.
It takes so long.
It can take so big.
Like from here to Kloss and Chase or Rose Hall.
Yeah.
That's a 40-minute drive.
Oh my God. It's a lot. And you know, where Lacey is, they're on some really nice dolomitic soils. It's also where Carlo Estates is. But Lighthall is really far south. It's right on the water. They get a lot more humidity there. It's also not that deep. The water gets very warm. If you've been to Sandbanks, you know. If you know, you know.
Again, they're 1 minute away from old friend from Long Dog. Like Lighthall and Long Dog are like 4 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes apart. Also, anyone listening, go check out Lighthall. They do a good job in terms of wine tourism.
They make cheese.
Yes, lots of cheese. It's a good spot. Like if you're going to Prince Edward County, it's one that I always throw on the list when I tell people, you know, where to go if they want to check out wines.
It's really good. They do a great job in their winemaking. Okay, you ready for a blend?
Mm-hmm.
Me too. So this is labeled actually the Morandin blend here, our Pleasant Lot, spelt with two T's, blend. Or is it Lot T? Who knows? I'm reading it as Pleasant Lot. And this is bottle 594 of 3,000.
Tiny little one. Also, this is a vineyard I don't know, which is fun.
You don't know Morandin?
I do not.
Okay. So this is VQA Prince Edward County. This is their 2019 Gewürztraminer Muscat, Pinot Gris, and Riesling blend. Morandin is actually wineries that you can see first heading in. It's like a little shack on the side of a road.
Because actually the first one I always see when I go in is Stanner's.
Oh, no, Morandin is really close to Stanner's.
Okay, so then I've just somehow I've missed it.
It's a white shack on the side of the road.
Right.
You will miss it.
Okay.
Unless you know that it's there, you will miss it. I literally had somebody point it out to me and be like, that's Morandin. I'm like, cool. That looks like where they keep snowblowers in the summer. Maybe it's changed since. And I'm sorry to everyone from Morandin if they end up listening to this. It's a very small winery. They usually do a lot more purchased fruits. This is a friend of mine gave me this bottle because I told her to check out Morandin. And again, same thing. I didn't think this was a winery.
Mm-hmm. No. Also, now usually with a blend like this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but usually like blends like this are meant to be drunk young.
When
I see the, you know, like especially the Muscat coming in there. I got to say, first and foremost, I love the nose on this wine.
The nose is fabulous. So the thing is, I thought that this was, the friend of mine who gifted me this bottle also gifted me one of their Cabernet Sauvignons, which is VQA Ontario, not VQA Prince Edward County.
Okay. I was going to say Cabernet Sauvignon from Prince Edward County.
No.
You arrogant sons of bitches.
No. VQA Ontario, which means that it could be from anywhere in Ontario. I thought it was the same bottle. And then I moved and I noticed that this was not Cabernet Sauvignon because I just hadn't looked at it. I was like in my head, oh, I have two bottles of Cabernet Sauvignon VQA Ontario from Morandin, whatever. I'll drink that when I get to it. And then when I was looking today, I was like, oh, this is a blend. This is nice. And the nose is intoxicating.
Yeah. I mean, there's a spice, ginger, peach. I mean, like, you know what the great thing with this nose is? For people that are insecure about giving their tasting notes, this one's perfect because you could almost throw it 100 different things.
Oh, yeah.
And you could probably find it here.
This is like the nose on this is like the what you think the romantic female lead in a rom-com movie smells like. Like every possible flower.
Right.
Every possible fruit.
So it smells like Meg Ryan.
smells like any whatever female lead you have ever seen in any rom-com movie of any kind. This is what they all smell like.
Who would you put higher than Meg Ryan? Like, if we were doing the like the top rom-com actress.
Oh, God. I have to actually think of people's names. This is much harder than wine. This is far harder than... I'm remembering human beings. That's really, really hard.
It's a tough question. It's tough because, like, I go... For me, I'm going to go rom-coms. I'm going to go like 80s and early 90s and stuff and Nora Ephron films. And there's so many of them are Meg Ryan. So
yeah.
She to me feels like the number one.
I really did like Cameron Diaz in the earlier 2000s. Now yeah. I'm like, but like in the early 2000s, she did a bunch of really great ones. Yeah. And then.
Could Julia Roberts?
Oh, no, 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 no. Drew Barrymore.
Yes. Drew Barrymore.
This is what Drew Barrymore smells like in my mind. So, 51st Dates. The Wedding Singer. Yep. All that stuff.
All right. We'll go with Drew Barrymore. I like it.
Yeah. She's nice.
Yeah.
And she seems like a nice person.
She does seem like a nice person.
This smells like a nice one.
Yeah.
All right. If you heard my spit, I'm so sorry. But
By the way, I edit out. I always go back, especially ones where there's tastings, and I edit out. I keep some of it in. But some of the noises that we make when we're tasting, smelling, and spitting wine, I feel bad for the listeners if they have to hear that. So I do my best to edit as much of that out as I can.
I agree, but it is very important to spit wine if you would like. And my argument for spitting wine for anybody that doesn't agree is if you spit all the wines, then you don't get drunk off of stuff you don't like. Then you can go back and drink what you want and then get drunk off that.
Spicy, tangy.
Oh, I know. The palate is fabulous.
That's a really nice, that is a very nice, pleasing wine.
It is. It's called Pleasant Lot.
That's right. Oh, yeah, you're right. And I don't mean that as an insult, because sometimes you go, oh, that's nice and pleasing. That makes it seem like it's simplistic. There's nothing, you know, simple about this wine.
No, this movie is genuinely a rom-com. I'm sticking with the rom-com. I'm going with, like, Never Been Kissed. Mm-hmm. I think that's the movie that we're going for at this moment. That we're going for?
Okay. I don't remember that one as...
Drew Barrymore is a investigative journalist, and she goes to a high school and plays a high school student. Right. And she's never been kissed before. Then she gets kissed by a teacher on a baseball field.
That is... Yeah.
And the fashion is iconic.
Love Actually, to me, is the greatest rom-com of all time.
I do, but it's very weird.
You know what the weirdest, you know what's one of the weirdest things? This is totally off topic. Then I want to get to your videos. We'll take a second.
Okay.
If I was Liam Neeson, you know, when my son, like, you know, we basically just buried your mom.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm in love. It's like, kid, could you give this a couple weeks? You know, my wife is dead. And I know you say, I know I should be sad about mom, and I am, but my heart is broken. I'm in love. It's like, you're 8 or 7, whatever age you're at. Like, fuck off. Like, mom's dead. Let's focus on that.
The other thing I really don't like is I find that movie very... I'm going to ruin this movie. I'm so sorry. I find that movie very male-gazy, and I hate the one where, like, the part where the guy comes to the door and he ruins their whole wedding video by only filming her and then just, mm-hmm. like, sends... the message in the cards.
But
it's his best friend. She has to see him for how many more Christmases? How many more family engagements?
But he gets over it.
But the wedding. But the wedding video is ruined. It's ruined forever.
Yes. Okay. No. Only parts of it. Because remember, she said there was other videos. He was only one camera. It wasn't like he was the lone single camera. So it's not like he was in control of the whole wedding.
It's still really creepy.
It is a little bit creepy.
No, it's stalkery. Very creepy.
You know how I'm okay with it? Because he set up the beautiful wedding with everyone, you know, singing love, and they have all the instruments.
That's beautiful. Selfishly for her.
Okay, there's that as well.
It's very male-gazy.
All right.
It unfortunately is. I'm so sorry to ruin Love Actually.
It doesn't ruin it all. It's the only storyline that's bad is Colin. You know, the one who's like, you know, who goes to Wisconsin to find sex.
Oh, yeah, that guy does suck. You know what? See, there's many sucky parts about that movie.
No, there's one. That storyline's bad. Everything else is fine.
And then there's the president who sleeps with his, like, assistant, which is also terrible.
He never sleeps with her.
How do you know that?
Because they would have addressed it if they had sex. They never had sex. In fact, they never kissed until after she left. In fact,
that's still using
Pat, but he came crawling to her. She didn't come crawling to him. He came crawling to her by going to every door and singing "Good Ring Whiston."
What is she like? 22 and he's 50. When you look back on your life.
He was a young president.
Okay, prime minister.
Prime minister. I'm such a dummy.
And we're going to end it there.
How long does it take you to do your videos? Because people should... By the way, where do people follow you This is a bad time for me to ask you a question as you're sipping wine. Where do people go on Instagram to find you? And again, winebyrenee.com.
Winebyrenee.com is my website, but my Instagram account is also winebyrenee. Mm-hmm. But I write and I do a lot for a lot of different locations. I'm going to be on the new version of City Line because City Line is over now. It did 40 years and now it's ended. There's going to be a third hour of BT that has City Line on it. Mm-hmm. I do breakfast television, CHCH, other news channels from time to time. I write for about like 8 different publications, including El Gourmet, Foodism, The Canada Magazine, Distillery District Magazine, Holler, Monarch, and more. There's Liquid Pleasures channel, which is a really fabulous YouTube channel. There's all the work that I do on my videos and then my events. It takes like kind of a lot of planning to do almost everything, I'd say.
Because your Instagram videos look great.
I film everything myself on the Instagram videos. With Liquid Pleasures, we have a full team. So we have a full team of, we have a director, we have a camera guy, audio, everything. Those take a lot longer. Those are like a half day affair. Mm-hmm. And sometimes like the clients on set as well, and they have things that they want to say. Mm-hmm. So we have full scripts that are done for that. We have full location scouting that happen. So those take like at least 4 hours. Mm-hmm. My Instagram videos, I'll knock out like a couple of the back end shooting in about like, I'll knock out about like 5 of them in a day.
That's crazy. Cause it's like, I watch them and I know how hard it can be and just the edits and just, you know, it's well shot, it's well lit. And every now and then I see just a little slice of your dog. Every now and then your dog is, part of the head is made an appearance.
So the last one that I did, the Rueda reel I did in June, he would not leave the paella alone.
Right.
He would not, like, you can see him in the background just being like, what are you doing? What's happening? Why'd you bring this over here? It's closer to the ground now. Can I have it? He is around. But I find that I kind of just schedule a day for filming and I just bang all of it out. And then I've been rewatching 30 Rock, so I'll just like put on an old episode that I don't really need to pay attention to, and I'll edit all of them, and I'll edit all my photos, and then I'll write a caption. You know, as much as people are not liking AI right now, I am finding AI and ChatGPT really great for like helping me schedule things and come up with kind of like researching taglines that I would need to find, researching common hashtags, researching like anything else that I would need on the, that surrounds all of my wine knowledge. So everything is a lot faster.
Isn't that like what AI ChatGPT? ChatGPT, thank you. To me seems like the best use of it, where you're doing it to save yourself time. You're not doing it to create original content. You're doing it to help support the original content you're creating. In fact, your way of using it is the utopia of what we want. What we don't want, it's where it's
write me an article about. Yes, yeah,
exactly.
I like asking it to like search the internet for like references to things. So it'll be like, what's a common hashtag people are using for orange wine? Mm-hmm. Get me 10.
Yeah.
Now I'm not researching that, because that is part of the video. Making the video is one thing, but getting it ready to like put out into the world is a whole other thing. Like, I also asked, what are the most common songs people are using on Instagram right now for reels?
Perfect.
Great. Now I don't have to go through and swipe through and see how often people are using this, how many views they're getting from that.
You know what that is? It's Google.
It is Google.
It's just basically like,
it's fast Google.
Fast.
I don't have
Google.
To read.
More important question. Maybe the most important question I can ask you on this.
Okay.
When Liz and Jack are sharing a glass of white wine, which does happen. I mean, a lot of times he's drinking some sort of spirit and she's drinking white wine, but you know, it'll vary. What do you think the white wine is that they're drinking? Like, I'm assuming, like, looking at the color, it's some like Premier Cru Montrachet or something. Like, what do you think Jack and Liz are drinking?
I'm trying to remember this video.
No, I'm talking about every fourth episode of 30 Rock.
Oh.
You just mentioned you rewatch 30 Rock. I rewatch 30 Rock.
You know what they're drinking? You know what they're drinking? They're in real life.
No, I don't want real life. I'm trying to imagine what is Jack Donaghy's
bar? Have you not noticed that they have like a bunch of like Glenfiddich and stuff there?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I know the hard liquor. I'm talking about, but often the two of them will be sharing a glass of white wine.
She's 100% drinking Pinot Grigio. Her character is like Pinot Grigio. She is one of the reasons why.
Yeah.
Pinot Grigio. Tina Fey is the reason why a lot of people associate Pinot Grigio with women.
When she goes to Jack's office, she gets the good stuff. She gets the Burgundy.
Well, she gets Scotch, which is funny because he's Irish, mm-hmm. drinks Scottish whiskey, and all of his whiskeys are Scottish and not Irish.
I never noticed that.
Yes.
What's the next wine?
The next wine is an orange wine.
Mm-hmm. Which can scare some people, but Stanners is damn good.
Stanners is really good. And this wine is very orange. Like, oh, yeah. Very orange in color. Quick one rundown of this wine. This is a 2018. So we're actually jumping back a vintage. We were in 2019 before. Now we're in 2018. This is Pinot Gris. Pinot Gris, part of the Pinot family. And orange wine is white wine made in a red wine style, fermented on the skins. It can look orange depending on the wine. Pinot Gris is Pinot Grigio, which is a really kind of nice segue from what we were talking mm-hmm. about before, hilariously. And Pinot Grigio in the Romato style is always pink. Mm-hmm. It is a gray-toned grape. This is honestly like the perfect bag of fuzzy peaches.
Yes.
In color.
It's like if you took sour fruit and juicy fruit and you mixed it together.
It is very fuzzy peaches on the nose, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But there is a juiciness on the finish on this fella. Also, for people, Stanners, solid chard. They got some really good, they got their higher end Pinot. I think it's called narrow rose.
I have rose, a bunch of those.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name. Do you remember Stanners' first name?
I will in a moment, which is embarrassing because one of my first...
Is it Colin? No.
One of my first interviews was with the good people at Stanners.
Dang. I can't remember his name, which really sucks. But Stanners and the guy that owns it, who Matt will find out in a minute, he's a scientist by nature.
Yep.
I really like this kind of... This is the terroir of a winemaker. You have terroir, the concept of everything around a grape is what adds itself into the wine and makes it what it is. Or would you be a different person if you grew up in a different country with different parents, spoke a different language? Odds are you would be, which is why we have these differentiations in terroir. But the winemaker side of terroir is really unique. And what you get with Stanners is this really scientific style of things, like how he's working on his vineyards are really quite unique, especially with the narrow rows.
You are right. Yes, Colin.
Colin.
Yes.
Yeah, Colin Stanners. There we go. Okay, I was right. Fantastic.
Cheers to Colin.
Great. Cheers to Colin. So this is, from what I remember, this is a fully fermented, and it's, here we go. They have skin contact, leaving destemmed grapes soaking on the juice for 72 hours prior to pressing and fermentation. So this is not fermented on the skins. However, they've basically like left this juice to sit pre-fermentation, which is really quite unique, which I believe that he might inoculate, but this is fun.
It is. This is a good orange wine for people that are nervous about orange wine mm-hmm. because it's big, it's rich, it's juicy. It's not going to scare you. It's not an orange wine made by someone who's trying to make a point. It's made by someone who loves the grape, loves the process, who loves where their vines grow from.
And honestly, this is a really fun orange wine. It honestly smells like the best Jell-O you've ever had made from fuzzy peaches.
There's always room for Jell-O.
There's always room for Jell-O. Jell-O is great. I would turn this into a Jell-O. Just add some gelatin into it. Please don't tell the wine people.
I don't think they'd be too happy about that. I think they would.
I like having pedestrian moments in wine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, yeah.
Because, you know, wine is filled with so much pomp and circumstance all mm-hmm. the time. And I love pedestrian moments.
Oh, God, yeah. It's like when I go to the States, I have my favorite boxed wine. And if I'm ever staying in Florida, like folks' places in Florida, first thing we do is we go to the Costco. We grab the Costco. We go to the Costco and we grab the favorite box red, favorite box white. And that's the day wine. That's the near the pool wine or mm-hmm. walking near the ocean wine. So that, you know, you need those as well.
You need that. But I also like trying pricier wine, more intentional wine. In a pedestrian way.
Mm, okay.
This is what I like about like the work that I do in the wine industry is really based around like how consumers interact with wine. Love doing trade stuff. Love doing industry stuff. But it is my genuine belief that the way that everyday people interact with wine is what keeps this industry afloat.
Oh, God. It's not us.
It is not
we
us.
We do not keep it
We afloat. Are not buying anywhere near as much as them.
Well, I disagree on that, but...
I know, but
we're a tiny percentage.
Uh-huh.
We are a... 1%. We are the tiny, tiny percentage.
And I really want people to just, even if it's an expensive bottle and it's $120 and you really want to just have it with like a burger or some chips, just have it. Just have it. Just enjoy it however you want to enjoy it.
Don't put it on a pedestal. Enjoy the shit out of it, but you don't need to put it on a pedestal.
You don't. And I think like a special day for a bottle can be honestly any day. You had a bad day, great, special day. You had a super great day, it's a special day. It's a birthday, it's an anniversary, it's a marker of an occasion. I wouldn't overcomplicate it too much.
No, I remember when I moved into this condo, it was one of my favorite California cabs and pizza. And that's what it was. Oh, got slightly cut off there. The wine, by the way, was Dariouche, Napa Cabernet Sauvignon. It was actually one of the first wines I ever purchased via consignment about a decade, I guess when I moved in, about 3-4 years earlier. Yeah, not a perfect pairing with a slice of pizza, but you know, I moved in to a new condo and just felt like time to celebrate. So that's what I did. I'm like, I opened up this big wine and I paired it with a very basic but still pleasing pizza. By the way, I'm not a pizza snob. I like pizza. It has a place in my heart. But it's a reminder that, you know, to always look for where you can pair great wines with. It doesn't just have to be an anniversary or a birthday, and though it should. This was okay. We moved in. All right, finally moved in. Let's open up a really nice bottle of wine. And then on the other side, though, is don't put wine on a pedestal, as me and Renee were talking about. And basically, it's you don't need to save the great wine for always the great moment. Sometimes Wednesday night is the perfect moment. But I realize now I'm reiterating what you just heard. Anyway, that is the end of part one of my interview with Renee. Part two, I'm going to basically release it right after you hear this one. Part two is going to pick up with the work she is doing with a very large California wine producer. And we will hear that, or you'll hear that in a moment. And again, as always, thanks so much, everyone, for listening, subscribing, rating, reviewing, telling your friends, and all that stuff you hear people say on other podcasts. Anyway, thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.